Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got William Miller.
How you doing there, Blake Buck?
I'm doing good. We've also got Justin Fick.
How you guys doing?
And guys, before we start the show, I got a little bit of an announcement, a little update, if you will. Now, William Miller, you probably didn't know this, but last episode, we had a pretty good show.
Yep.
I thought it was a great show. One of our best, even.
One of the best shows we've ever done in recent memory, I would say. Mm-hmm. We had all the classic elements, you know, Judgment, Jank, all those. They all came back, and about 2 days after we recorded it, somehow, in a flurry of cleaning up things on my desktop, I deleted my audio. That show is gone forever.
Whoa.
Dead. Garbage. Never happened. So that's why there was no show last week.
You know what? It wasn't me this time.
I swear, I must have the William Miller disease now. But yeah, I was cleaning up files on my desktop, thought something, I don't know. And I even tried one of those, like, you know, backup, like, oh, save your data to nothing. Got nothing. So I guess we got to do it again.
It's a good thing I already listened to it.
I see, that joke's not even funny because they didn't hear that joke. The joke being that you don't even pay attention during these shows and just code.
That's the joke. You're right.
Anyway, so this is, I guess, I don't even know what number. This is number nothing. That's how much hate there is. Your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, July 6th, 2011.
Well, Justin Fick, you need to at least update the listeners on your new situation.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about this in our ill-fated episode, but if you've been paying attention to my Twitter, I am now unemployed, and I am now an indie game developer.
Ow!
So last Friday, so this would be probably 2 weeks ago, when you guys are finally listening to the show, Justin Fick got fired from Freeverse.
Whoop.
So, yeah, whoops. Yeah, no layoffs this time, no, you know, cutting costs, no. Justin Fick was fired out of a cannon.
Now, Justin Fick, I didn't ask this last time, but there seems, okay, you kind of described some of the things that led to this, but it seems like there's something. There was some event that perhaps led to this directly. Is that how it was, or not so much?
It was just sort of like an overarching, just, I don't know. I wasn't happy at Freeverse for the longest time. Like, I didn't like the projects we were working on. I didn't like the tech we were using.
What I'm getting at, just admit that you shit on somebody's desk.
Symbolically, I was shitting on a lot of desks.
Yeah, if you would follow Justin Fick's Twitter for any extended period of time, you would have felt his wrath. I mean, it was pretty obvious.
Oh yeah, I don't have a whole lot of love for the free to play business model either. I mean, you know, I remember getting in trouble one point because I made a Twitter post about, I hope I meet Zynga CEO Mark Pincus so I can punch him in the cock. Yeah, I got in trouble for that one. So it was just like shit like that. I think it just got too much over time, and I was just like, enough. Get the fuck out.
So now you're like a week into indie development, right, Justin Fick?
Yeah, pretty much. I spent this week sort of whirlwinding around my apartment, turning into a game studio. So I got some trinkets and some furniture and shit on the way from Amazon. And
nice, always a good move to spend money when you're unemployed.
Exactly, okay. Got to spend money to make money, Blake Buck. That's how you monetize that shit. And yeah, there's the UDev Games competition starting up. By the time you listen to this show, it'll be already going. So I've got my engine all up to snuff, made all the improvements that I got to make, and I got some game ideas I want to start playing around with.
Uh-oh. So, better hide that power, son.
Oh yeah. So I got big plans. I got, you know, UDev Games is coming up. Like, if the game does well, I want to submit it to IGF. And then I've got my engine all ready to go for Mac and iOS and Windows.
Very cool.
So I'm ready to start doing my own shit. I've been putting it off long enough.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and hop into the news. Who's got our first piece of William Miller? Take our first trinket.
Sure. So this bit of news has been rattling around for a little while. Bungie of Halo fame has announced a new, I guess, an initiative is what you should call it. They've registered the trademark Bungie Aerospace. Now, when William Miller first heard this, he loves space a lot in a real big way. And I thought, they're going to go for the X Prize. I'm so excited. No, this is not a spaceship. They are not going to make whatever that spaceship in Halo was.
Well, because that's what it was doing, right? Like, John Carmack founded Armadillo Aerospace, and he's making fucking spaceships, like, in his spare time. Like, programming games is enough of a challenge for me anymore. I am now making rockets.
Yeah, they blow up. He's not very good at making rockets. He should stick to the stick to making games. Anyway, Bungie Aerospace, contrary to what the name may suggest, is actually an initiative inside the company that's being spearheaded by a couple people. We're not really sure how big the group is, but what the idea is to find and foster cool projects under the Bungie umbrella and sort of help them. Go from start to finish and bring them to a high degree of quality and help promote them. And so it's specifically targeted at indie and social and mobile games, which is really cool to me, I think. And they're already starting to work with a couple teams. They've got some Android and iOS things going on, it looks like. So I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. It's like we're going to, you know, dangle our feet in the water here a little bit. You know, we're Bungie. These guys are working on Halo, whatever. They could take a couple hours off their week to work with some indie devs, and then they get to slap the Bungie name on something that's good, or, you know, throw it in the trash if it's not. No risk.
I like this, but I don't know. It remains to be seen how this is going to turn out. I mean, it could just be... I don't know. How many titles are they projecting to release with this thing?
Nobody really knows. I wouldn't imagine many to start, but I think it's about, like... It's about integrating the titles into the Halo community, or not the Halo community, but the Bungie community, and, like, you know, sort of putting the Bungie seal of approval on a product and putting it out there.
I just say if the Bungie name carries a lot of weight with it, all it's going to take to ruin that is one real shit game, and you know what I mean.
Well, I think that's the idea of this initiative. It's like they won't release one that's shitty. It's like they're going to take a few at a time, polish them up, and only put the ones that are good out there. I mean, that's what I imagine this would be.
I'd like to see, you know, because it says, you know, indie, mobile, and social games. Like, is that more on the indie side, or is it going to end up more of like a social game portal?
Yeah, that would be what I would hope it wouldn't turn into.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, Master Chief Checkers. Play it online with your friends on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about social and, you know, the games that are out there right now, but I think there's a lot of room in that space for innovation, provided provided that the people making the things are insulated from market pressure to make it a certain way. Like, it could be really cool if, you know, it's sort of like a grant, you know. It's like, okay, here's some money, make something crazy, and out comes like Cow Clicker. You know, that game was really funny, I liked it. So I, you know, don't poo-poo on the platform.
That's all I know how to do. All right, it's all I've got left.
Well, the problem is, right? Like, social games are, you know, it's like they're becoming. I don't know. It's sort of a genre the way, like, MMO has become a specific game that's just over and over and over again. You know, like all MMOs now are pretty much, you know, either World of Warcraft or a game like World of Warcraft. So now social games right now are just either Farmville or a game like Farmville. Like, it's become a genre, like a very specific genre. So it's really not about the mechanics in a broader sense. Like, I think there could be some cool, you know, like real social games, like, you know, games that are social instead of I'm gonna spam you guys with my fucking, you know, Farmville updates every 5 seconds. Like, that's not social, but there is room in there for developers to do it, but they need to do it.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, there's no currently, like, if you wanted to take a stab at something really innovative, you couldn't do it under the structure of social shops right now. I mean, you can, right? But it still has to fit that model. Like you're saying, there's a genre that it's got to fit into. And what I see this is doing is saying, okay, guys, well, you know, we're going to take a chance on something. It's no, you know, no skin off our back because we're rich from Hayro. I don't know. I mean, that's what I want this to be. I want this to be an umbrella for indie devs to experiment and make cool things. And then if they're good, you know, Bungie gets them out there and gets them sold and makes money.
Yeah. Or, you know, leave, you know, keep the responsibility on the shoulders of the indie developers. So if it's like, if, you know, Bungie's going to help this developer out, and if their game sucks, well, that developer made a shitty game. You know, it's kind of like Crow Team is doing with Serious Sam. Like, there are three indie developers making Serious Sam games, and it's kind of like that same help out the indies initiative. But if their game sucks, well, they made a shitty game. That's all. It's not Crow Team's fault.
That's true. And, you know, I mean, we've said this before, and I'm sure we'll say it again, but Justin Fick, I mean, especially now, what a great time it is to be an indie developer with all movements like this happening.
Oh, I mean, no, sure, I totally agree.
There's still shitty things that happen, shitty games that are made in the indie scene, but, you know, even 2-3 years ago, you didn't see opportunities like this.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more room for indie developers to sort of grow their mind share, because I think a lot of AAA developers now are kind of getting peeled off into the social space. Like, you know, companies, I don't know, like you look at all the layoffs, like Activision has to take absolutely zero risk with their games, and, you know, Capcom is moving into the social game space, and they're, you know, and all these companies are sort of looking at social games like, we need to either do this or we're going to die. And I think that the traditional game, I think, will be, and, you know, will end up being adopted by the indies. And I think they'll actually push the traditional game medium forward from here on out. That's my personal opinion anyway.
All right. Well, is there anything else you got to add to this, Wee Miller, with your news story there?
Oh, that's about it. We'll keep our eye on this. I still want to build a spaceship with Master Chief in it.
It's only a few years off at this point. I think, you know, it's many Microsoft dollars that they built up over the years.
They just need to build me a Master Chief. Like a remote-controlled, like, dude with a gun. And I'll just, like, send him out running around. I think that'd be fun. Just get, like, 10 people with Master Chiefs, like, in Central Park, and the Master Chiefs can have a death match in the middle of Central Park. Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yeah, with that U.S. Army, you know, go invest. anyway, Jessica, what have you got for us?
I don't want to join the Army or any of that shit. I just want a fucking remote control gun on a person.
So what, you got some legal stories for us, Jessica?
Yeah, I got all legal Bonanza Fest 2000 this week. So, my first news, and this is actually a kind of a bombshell, the violent video game law went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court just kind of swatted it down. Yeah. So this is, the case's official name is Brown versus the Entertainment Merchants Association.
Fucking Brown is back?
Fuck that guy.
That asshole is never fucking satisfied. Brown. Fucking education. Now, Mr. video games?
Mr. Brown can eat shit. So, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of the game industry. And basically saying that games are now, you know, they are covered under First Amendment freedom of speech.
It shocks me that this goes all the way to the Supreme Court. It seems like somebody would have figured out before then, hey, that's also, it seems like a no-brainer. Wasn't the decision like 7-2?
Yeah.
Did this really need to go all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, the thing is, like, violent video games, and video games in general, are such a great scapegoat for politicians looking to make their name by championing some sort of cause. Mm. You know? Because, I mean, the guy that sort of helped push this through, that, you know, Leland Yee, one of the, I think it's a representative from California, you know, it's like, this was like his baby, And, you know, and Hillary Clinton jumped on it for a little while. And it's like, when you want to champion something, like, video games are a pretty good bad guy. You know, I mean, there's all these studies going around about, you know, whether violent video games make people violent, and, you know, all the murder simulator talk. But
yeah, that's one thing they always reference. Like, you'll see in these articles, it's like, oh, we don't want to have games where there's simulated rape and torture, and it's like, what are these games you're playing? There are very few of the like, what is a game that rewards you for rape? I must have missed this
Duke
game because I would fucking love it. Does it?
I don't think it does specifically. But
all ladies have consensual sex with the Duke.
So video games are covered under First Amendment freedom of speech. The two judges that spoke against it, one of them sort of cited the interactive nature of games as the reason why they should not be covered. The other guy, I think Clarence Thomas was the other one, said that, you know, First Amendment rights do not count the ability of an industry to speak to children without going through their parents first, or something retarded, like some sort of puritanistic bullshit. So,
well, but at the same, I mean, now I hate to play devil's advocate here, but at the same time, you know, we talked about this last week. I was in Walmart, you know, and what do I see? I see a Mega Bloks, you know, basically Lego knockoff Mega Bloks, Halo toys, clearly in the children's section, clearly marketed towards children. I mean, you know that these games are being marketed to kids. And I know that, Microsoft and everybody else puts their hands up and say, we don't market to kids ever. But the fact of the matter is that they are. Maybe not directly, but that probably makes up a significant portion of Halo or Grand Theft Auto sales.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in a way, I mean, I can see some of the point, but
yeah, but you gotta remember, though, I mean, we've been doing that for a really long time. It's not... It hasn't just started with video games. I mean, when Chucky came out, you telling me they didn't make like Chucky action figure to market to little kids? Sure they did.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is not a new thing. It doesn't mean it's a good thing. I think like a lot of people got really excited about the Supreme Court decision, and it's good and fairly obvious to me, but it doesn't mean we need to be selling these games to kids. Like, we don't need to sell a 14-year-old Grand Theft Auto. I'm sorry. You're too young to play that game.
And people's go-to is always Grand Theft Auto, too. Grand Theft Auto is not even that violent. I mean, I guess it can be, but it's... I don't know. I guess it is violent.
It just seems like they
always go for these games. They're like, oh, there are these murder simulators and rape fantasy games. It's like, mainstream games aren't that violent. Not really.
Also...
Yeah, and then meanwhile, you know, I went to Target the other day, and Duke Nukem Forever is just sitting there on the shelf, and you know, so it's like obviously it's a case of certain games become scapegoats, and Grand Theft Auto, I think, you know, was a go-to game for that time and time again, and actually, honestly, I think Rockstar kind of enjoyed that position, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that sold a lot of Grand Theft Auto tapes for them.
And maybe the same is for the same is true for Duke Nukem. In fact, I think I just saw somewhere that it sold pretty well, the new Duke Nukem. Let's see if
when the first reviews were coming out, I'm like, you know, maybe this, you know, this could have been on purpose. Like, these are so bad, you know, that maybe this was intentional. Maybe they were like, you know, here's Duke Nukem Forever. Be as vile as you want to this game. You know, just say whatever you want to say. Say the worst things you could possibly imagine. Because the thing is, like, we all read those Duke Nukem Forever reviews. And, you know, all of them had some pretty good lines in them. Like, they were very quotable. And, you know, like, I'm sure that was, you know, like, the whole thing. Like, there's no such thing as bad publicity. You know? Maybe that was intentional, but...
Also, like, people don't understand, often in the media, people don't understand, like, the video games industry is self-regulated better than probably any other media industry, except maybe comic books. And comic books have sort of, they're on a downhill slide. I mean, they had the comic code in the 60s or whatever, but I mean, that's kind of out the window now. But like, you know, the ESRB, that's something that wasn't mandated. Like, the industry came together and did that. Like, there was a one before that after, you know, we've talked about this before, Mortal Kombat comes out, and there's this big outcry in the, you know, on Capitol Hill, and the games industry got together and made a regulatory body to regulate themselves. Like, we did that on our own. We did not have to be told. You know, we responded to what people wanted. And so we get, you know, the business gets vilified a lot, but we're way better at this than the film industry is, than, you know, other big media outlets are, certainly better than television. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like there's not an outcry against, you know, I haven't, well, then I guess I'm not into TV and don't really look into it much, but it seems like you hear about video game outcries way more than television outcries for violence and sexuality, which it's so dirty I won't even watch it, the television.
I mean, just watch CBS after 7
o'clock. Have you seen Glee? Like,
every show on that network starts with a dead body.
Right. So, let's see. Anything else we want to say on this topic before we move on? I mean, I guess it makes sense to us, but, you know.
It's one of those things, we kind of knew that we had it under control for the longest time, and it's just like, to me anyway, this is just validation. Like, I'm glad it's over, and I'm glad it's overwhelmingly on our side.
Yeah.
Yeah, Duke Nukem Forever on top of the UK sales charts last week. I don't know if they've released sales figures, but clearly violence and titties are getting you somewhere.
Well, also with the Duke Nukem name, don't forget. I mean, this is a game that's sort of been on people's, you know, been on people's minds in some way or another for the last decade and a half. So
I'm sure, it's a curiosity too, yeah. You know.
Like I knew it, you know, one of the guys at Freeverse was like, I know this game is going to be bad, but I have to play it just for closure.
All right, well, I got a story for you guys. Speaking of sales figures of violent games, or maybe not so violent, L.A. Noire ships 4 million units and is PC-bound this fall. Rockstar's open-world detective game, blah, 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 will be on Windows with keyboard mapping, gamepad functionality. 4 million units. Let's see, it sold 900,000 copies domestically. No, wait, let's see. Originally announced, blah, 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 blah. It shipped 4 million units to date, L.A. Noire. In its first month, it shipped 900,000 copies. So it's been doing good month after month. 4 million is pretty strong for, I don't know, is that pretty strong, though? I mean, should it be compared to, like, Red Dead Redemption or Grand Theft Auto?
I think for what it is, it's really strong.
I mean,
it's definitely not a Grand Theft Auto. It does not have that mass appeal. And for it to sell 4 million copies, you know, that being the case, I think it's doing really well.
L.A. Noire was a huge risk for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, just in terms of concept, like, you're not playing a bad guy, you're trying to maintain order, and it's not like a violence game, it's an investigation game. Like, I was talking to one of my buddies, and it's like, you know, it's one of those games that rewards, like, critical thinking, and critical thinking nowadays is a niche. You know, so it's like,
it's not a niche.
Not Blake Buck's no, niche, definitely yeah. Not.
It's a pain. It's not a niche.
So just the concept of L.A. Noire was a risk, I think, to them.
Now, this isn't in our news queue this week, but I've heard some grumbling about the development process for L.A. Noire. Apparently, it took 7 years to make that game.
Yeah, and they had to fire, like, most of their staff. 8 times, yeah. Or something. It's this.
Justific, what do you know about that?
Actually, I haven't read much. I think this was starting to surface in the last couple of days or so, and I've kind of not read any news since I got fired. So
yeah, the IGDA has launched like an investigation or something. I didn't even know they had the authority to do that, but I guess they do.
I really don't like the company that put this game. The guy that runs it, Team Bondi, wherever their executive director is. That dude is a gigantic tool. They're Gabe Newell, whatever. Dude, oh my God. I saw him in an interview on GameSpot, and he's like, oh man, what is it he said that was so stupid? I wrote it down. It was so stupid, and I can't remember it now. But yeah, he's a giant.
I think
tool.
I remember you talking about this guy before.
Yeah. Get out. Anyway, so that's it on L.A. Noire.
Yeah, I did see an article on, you know, the fact that the development team worked long hours and got no overtime, but I was like, you know, how's that different from, I'm not going to say my job, but how's that different from most game jobs, you know?
Well, you know, maybe that I would argue there's maybe a problem with the whole system in general. I mean, I know you have to get things done, but at the same time, it's the fact that, like, you're trying to maximize profits and minimize cost, right? And part of
that... it's not. Well, that's part of it. But the biggest issue is, like, there would never be crunch ever in this business if people could accurately predict how long it would take to make a game. Like, crunch is not profitable. It's not something that companies want to do. But it, you know, it's a factor. Factors like bad management and like unforeseen technical hurdles and all that stuff. Like making a piece of software, especially something as complicated as a game, you just can't tell how long it's going to take. And so, it's crunch is just a part of the business, really.
I don't know, but think about a company like Blizzard. They make games that sell millions and millions of copies. And I mean, I guess they have crunch, but they
have the luxury of, and they do have crunch. That's the thing, like. You know, you may think that everybody works an 8-hour day there, but that's not true. You know, they do have crunch at Blizzard just like everybody else.
Well,
they
have to meet deadlines. Blizzard doesn't have any deadlines is what it is. Like,
yeah. Right.
Their only deadlines are probably just internal. You know, in terms of this game has to ship by now. Like,
yeah,
you the only people that know that are the people inside Blizzard. And, you know, because of that, because they set their own...
I don't think so. I think when E3 rolls around, when GDC rolls around, they crunch a little bit.
Oh, yeah? What did they crunch on this year? Because they had nothing this year.
Well, I know, but when they set the goal of showing at a conference or something, I'm just saying, like, regardless of what fairy tale land you think it is over there, I'm sure those guys, you know, work long hours just like the rest of us.
I know that, but my point is that maybe if we didn't have a culture... a working culture that's so dominated by, I'm not trying to say don't have deadlines, but if it's not, I don't know. I think you get what I'm saying. Perhaps the strict hardline approach is not the best to go with.
I think as soon as you get to a company that's big enough to have, you know, shareholders, and it's big enough to, you know, have other companies that are depending on, you know, on your game being done by a certain time, you know, then just that fantasy of an 8-hour day starts falling apart really quickly. You know, and honestly, the only people who are truly immune from it, I think, are, you know, are indie developers, where their only time constraint is how much money they have in their bank accounts, you know?
Yeah, about to say, Justin Fig, I think you're going a couple months from now, if this game ain't selling too hot, I think you're going to be finding a real deadline pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know... But it's not like I'm working with a publisher that's saying, Justin Fick, you need to get this done in 4 months or we're laying you off, you know?
Right.
So it's really just, you know, how much money do I have left? How much time do I have? How much time does that give me to make a game? That, you know, that kind of thing. And that's really the only, I guess, deadline specifically, but... It's not like, oh, I'm going to make this game and, you know, someone says that it has to come out in time for, you know, E3 or something.
Well, speaking of companies that take forever to put out games and only release them when they're finally and totally done, Valve has taken Team Fortress 2 and announced that it is free to play. This is for Mac, PC, and I guess Orange Box pack-ins. I don't even know what that means. So basically the whole game is going to be free. This is part of their, you know, we talked about this a little last week that they've started having a couple of free games, but now bring in Team Fortress 2. That's a relatively recent game for them. Maybe 2 years old, three years old, somewhere in that neighborhood, Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I think it's
like 3-4 years old.
So, I mean, we talked about this a little last week, but is this a smart business model to say, here's a free game? They still have some premium stuff. Like you can buy little hats for your guys in the game. So, I mean, I guess it can make money in that sense, but I don't know. Is this like a new model? Is it like, are they going to start doing this with more of their Steam games once they reach a certain age?
I'm sure they're using this as their test bed.
Yeah.
You know, because the other thing too is Team Fortress 2, they're not, you know, unlike the social free-to-play games like Farmville or any of the stuff that I used to make, there's no vice around your balls. Okay, so it's like, it's, you know, you can play every single map on Team Fortress 2. Like, you can get every single character, and, you know, you can, you can get the whole Team Fortress 2 experience, and you're really just paying for, you know, little extra bonuses that you don't really need.
Right.
You know, like you said, things like the hats. Hmm. So, you know, like there's definitely no vice. Like, they're, you know, they're kind of doing a very, there's a lot of goodwill behind it, I think. So, I don't know. If it might work. I mean, people love their fucking hats in Team Fortress 2. So, you know, that might do pretty good.
And it's interesting to see also, like, Call of Duty, you know, they got that Call of Duty Elite that's going to be, you know, totally online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, perhaps have a free component. We speculated how it might have a free component. Then you pay for each map or each gun or something. It's going to be interesting to see, like, how this evolves with, I don't know, over the next 2 years of the difference, like, the difference between, like, full game and demo when you're using mm-hmm. these, you know, free-to-play models.
Yeah, well, I mean, this sort of ties into what I said earlier. I mean, all these big companies are moving into that social free-to-play space. You know, and, you know, they're not doing it immediately, but they're doing it bit by bit. You know, Call of Duty is, you know, they're going from being games that are sold to services that are subscribed to.
And that's where the cheddar is, baby. Bring it in. Bring in that cheddar.
So I think, you know, I think a lot of these big companies are going to move in that direction soon.
Now, William Miller, you got some news for us, right? You got one more heat.
No.
I thought you did. You only had one heat.
No, I refused, remember? And then you said, let's start, and I win.
Oh, my God. All right. Justin Fick, you got one more for us.
I got one more in my my legal portfolio for the week. So, I don't know if you guys remember Tim Langdell.
Oh, why don't you bring us up to speed on old Tim Langdale?
Oh, so, wait, first of all, because some people may not be familiar. Let's get the whole journey.
Yeah. All right, so Tim Langdale, I'm gonna be as unbiased as I possibly can about this. Tim Langdale is the fucking dickless chowderhead who sues every single developer that uses the word edge in their title anywhere. The reason why Soul Calibur is called Soul Calibur is because they were not allowed to call it Soul Edge because of this fuckhead.
Really?
And, yeah.
Wow,
and
I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, how did they get Mirror's Edge then? Was he suing EA?
There's a big fight about that. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they got to keep Mirror's Edge. But, yeah, Soul Edge had to be released as Soul Calibur out here because of this guy. So he
Is it still called Soul Edge in Japan?
I believe so.
I know the first one was called Soul Edge, I think, in the U.S. Anyway, continue.
I don't know. I don't know if they adopted it all over the world, but I know when it came out here, like, it became Soul Calibur.
Okay.
So, and then also Tim Langdell went after a small indie developer who made a game called Edge. And which is actually a very cool little puzzle game for the iPhone and very well done. And this guy just went after it and it actually got removed from the store for a very long time.
Hmm.
So this guy is a patent troll of the highest order. And he has now been slaughtered and slapped down. Basically he no longer has the ability to claim a copyright to a noun.
Yeah, okay, the first game it was Soul Edge was the first Soul Calibur game, and then in 96 on the PlayStation, then it was Soul Calibur after that in the arcade and Dreamcast and all subsequent releases. So yeah, I guess so.
Now, I read that article that you posted on your Twitter feed, Justin Fick, sort of a breakdown of the entire court case. Blake Buck, if you could read, you would have loved this. It had all kinds of like secret tapes and like these convoluted lies that he would cook up to get himself. Like, the guy is just, I mean, anybody that just sort of stepped outside of himself analytically, you'd have, I just can't believe this guy. Like, okay, so let me give you an example. He claimed, so one of the big misconceptions is that Edge, the copyright that Langdale holds, has something to do with Edge magazine. And that's totally false. So what happened was Edge magazine was, I think, a UK publication.
Okay.
And they wanted to sell it, distribute it in the United States, call it Edge, and they licensed the Edge name from Langdale. And, you know, Edge magazine has a very distinctive look. It's got that Edge logo or whatever. Langdale, in the court case, claimed that he invented that logo, when in fact he did not. Hmm. So in order to prove that he did this, he presented the judge as evidence with a disc that he claimed was from, like, 1993 or something, when this deal went down, which had a picture of the logo on it. After some like, analytics by the defense, it was shown that the disc was actually formatted by a Windows 95 computer. So it was impossible for the thing to be on there from 93. And then he was like, oh, well, I made a duplicate of it, or there were two duplicates of it, or something. Like, it was... And they got lost in the mail or something. It was the most bizarre thing. I don't even know.
Yeah, like I think there are like three different discs in that debacle for him to like cover up this lie. Like, you know, like the first one got destroyed, so he made copy B, and you know, but that's still a copy of the original, which is copy C, and it's too fragile to mail. And it's like, oh my god, it's like the judge in the end called his evidence quote unquote absurd.
Whoops.
And there are even a couple times where he had witness statements signed by people that he just invented out of thin air. So he's been, you know, this was his case against Future Publishing was his opponent, his vanquisher. Hmm. So he's out of the picture. He's gone. This is another long legal thing that I'm so glad is over. Because this guy was like, honestly, in my opinion, like this guy is worse than Bobby Kotick, worse than fucking Mark Pincus Azinga, in terms of people who are harmful to this industry.
He's been at the top of your shit list for a long time. Yeah. You've shit on him numerous times on this show.
Yeah, I got
it's
nothing.
Good to get
I got
some shit closure.
Love this fucknut. So
I remember, I think it might have been Adam Atomic did this game. He made a game that was like, it was Bobby Kotick or Tim Langdale's face, and it was his disembodied head, which was propelled by this jet stream of shit coming out of his mouth. And you had to like drive his face around. I don't remember exactly what the game was, but that was the idea. It was like, around the time that he was burying the iPhone game.
Yeah, I think, didn't TIGSaurus just do a whole competition where every game you entered had to use the name Edge in the title somehow?
Yes, they did that.
Nice. So that was fucking great.
All right. Well, anything else to add to Mr. Langdale's final demise?
No. Good riddance. Fuck stick.
Our last story is about Bethesda's new game, Eldritch Scrolls 16, blah, blah, Skyrim. I just can't get into this game. I'm sorry. I'm just auto-shitting on this game already. So let me pull back. But the new news is that the Skyrim will have fewer but more substantial DLC packs. So Todd Howard, who is a tool. Oh my God, what a tool Todd Howard is. Have you guys seen him on any videos or anything?
No.
God.
He's the guy who in all his interview videos has a copy of, like, you know... The Elder Scroll book that he writes his little notes in. He looks like the kid I would beat up in grade school for, and I was a fucking nerd. That's what this guy looks like. Anyway,
and all right, Blake Buck, come on now. First of all, lay off Todd. Secondly, this game looks sweet.
What? Wait, you're sticking up for Todd Howard right now? Really? That's what you're doing?
I think there's a little bit of CYA going on over here.
I don't know. I just look that game. Like, I can even, you know, I'm speaking from a biased perspective here. My game isn't going to be in competition with that game. That game looks sweet, man. They took, you know, I got a bunch of buddies working on it too. It's a cool game. It's like with the dragons and everything. There's this constant tension of you having one of these epic battles. Like anywhere you go, the depth, the RPG, like crunchy systems of that game. I don't know. I really like the original Oblivion. Morrowind was great too. I think this game is going to be good.
You must not have played much of Oblivion. That's
did.
Did you? Did
no,
you
dude,
beat it?
I played a lot of Oblivion.
I wanted to like Oblivion so much. It was such a beautiful looking game. And I just love like running around and getting lost in it. And I made the character I wanted to make, and I got all into it. And I was like, you know, checking people out and wandering around. And it was good fun. And then I realized like maybe two level ups into the game, my character was completely fucking gimped, and I was getting killed by every single enemy that I ran into.
And now, that game,
are you fucking shitting me?
It was definitely broken. There were problems with it. The difficulty being the number one problem.
No, that's not. No, but the number one problem with that game, with Oblivion, because it was a good game. But what doesn't work is it's you break these games down to what they really are. Oblivion is just a series of fetch quests. You go to the fucking bottom of the cave. You get the stupid trinket you don't give a shit about. You take it back to the dude. He gives you experience. That's the whole game. Do that a million fucking times over and over because that's as deep as it gets. Oh, okay. I can sneak. Maybe I can sneak past this one enemy. Oh, it's got stealth elements. It was very rudimentary, very simple. The story was bad. Let's just go ahead. Let's call it bad. I mean, sure, the world and the atmosphere is interesting, but like, it was so generic fantasy. There were no really even any real characters because it had to follow that model of like, I'm the quest giver and go to the cave, right? There weren't really any overarching characters. It was just the same grind over and over. And I look at this one and it looks like the exact same thing.
I mean, yeah, and it's like my problem with it is, and this applies to any role-playing game that, you know, it's be really, really careful when you have dudes that level up with you. So it's like if I just want to run around and you know and around the starting area and then kill some dudes, like okay, well you know like and then it's just all of a sudden like that game became unplayably gimped for me, you know, and the thing is like I wasn't playing stupidly or I don't think so, maybe apparently I was because now now I can't progress anymore.
It comes with the sort of like freeform nature of that game that you can get lost and raped until you know oblivion.
The thing is, like, you know, it's okay to be able to wander into some cave that's too strong for you and you get smashed. But, you know, it's not okay when someone plays the way they want to play and suddenly it just becomes unplayable for them.
You know, that was a really bad problem with Morrowind. You think that was bad in Oblivion. Man, I remember playing Morrowind and I called them skeet devils. Those are them flying bat things. And I remember you go just a little ways out of camp, man. Skeet devils all over you. That's the noise they made. Don't like flying skeet devils.
Well, the other thing too, like the converse to that is, you know, like one of the strategies for beating the game easily is to stay at level one, and the last boss will be at level one. And it's like, did you guys really think this game through when you made it? You know, it's like the whole point of a game is presenting the player with a challenge, and you know they have to work to reach it. You know, like I don't know, like what end boss like in the history of video games is just gonna like sit there on his ass jerking off like if the player doesn't do anything? It's like, oh, you didn't level up, so I'm just gonna sit here and fucking you know just sit on my ass and let you kick the shit out of me.
And I think the last boss would probably just like not hit for as much damage. It's not like he wouldn't attack you, right? I think just his numbers would be lower, right?
Yeah, but it's a difference between, you know, a level one critter and what a last boss should be, which should be an epic fucking level 9,000 fight with lightning bolts shooting out of his dick in every direction. Like, you know, it's like, that's what a last boss should be. Like, I've seen speed runs of Morrowind that last, like, literally, like, 3 minutes, and the last boss just goes down like a bitch, and it's like, really? Like, you guys really did not think this game through.
Now, not to totally shun this, because I know it's apparently William's favorite game of all time, and it's his child, but it does seem smart, because I know that Fallout 3 had a lot of DLC, and it seems smart that what it sounds like they're going to do is release less, more substantial ones. And like, for instance, Shivering Isles on Oblivion, back when I was still into it, that was a really cool update because you got a whole lot of stuff. It was a huge expansion pack. And, you know, if we're talking about expansion packs in general, it's better to have, I think, fewer of them that give you more rather than frequent, less fulfilling ones.
I agree. I mean, you know, and it's like Shivering Isles kind of gave people what they wanted, too. Like, the reason why I want to, like, Oblivion, and the reason why I would love the game if I did would be the fact that I can just go explore and do whatever I want. It's got this huge, huge immersive world, and it's fucking gorgeous. So give me more of that. You know, I don't want horse armor. I want really cool new locales to run my dude around in.
Right. Anyway, let's see. Do we got any more news, or is that all of it? All right, let's just move along. Let's move along. All right, we got releases. We may take these releases. That's the one thing you got, right?
Ooh, I got them up here. Do I?
Oh no.
Maybe I don't. Oh no. Wait, is it in a tab? Hang on. Oh, it's in a tab. All right. All right, we got Deadblock.
How did this game get to the top of the list?
What is Deadblock?
Coming out July 6th, Deadblock is a defensive game where you must help the remaining survivors form an alliance and survive an undead invasion. Oh, it's dead like a block on a street, not like Blake Buck's head block.
Don't you do that.
Yeah, I think there must have been some sort of bug in the GameSpot releases to get this to the top of the list above the two that are coming up next, because I looked at the trailer for this, and I hope these guys aren't in Maryland, because this game looks like absolute shit. Like, this game, like the trailer for this is just awful. Like, just the animations look awful. Like, and the thing is, like, I love a good zombie game, too. Like, you know, Dead Rising 2, like, I love that shit. But the trailer for this isn't even worth looking at. Like, I don't even know how this got to the top of the list. I was let down.
Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. God, I thought we said this must have gotten delayed or something, because I thought we already talked about this one. But it's coming out next week. This is even more characters for your Super Street Fighter 4 Mega Ultra Neo Collection. Oh, did you guys see that game, Half Minute Hero, that came out on XBLA this week?
I've heard of it.
It sounds familiar.
Okay, well, it came out. It's a game that was on PSP called Half Minute Hero, where you play a whole RPG in 30 seconds.
Yes,
that's the game.
Yes.
I haven't really played much of it, but it looks pretty cool. But the Xbox Live re-release of it is called like Half Minute Hero, like Mega Ultra Neo Battle Collection or something like that.
But yeah, there's also something cool about this that I didn't know before. If you have Super Street Fighter 4, there's actually, I think it's either a $10 or a $15 DLC that turns it into Arcade Edition.
Huh.
That's kind of cool. So it's not like it's forcing you to buy a whole new game if you don't want to. It's also an unlock for the previous game. So,
Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon.
Oh, this one I'm excited for.
Dude, I'm telling you, this is we've been talking about this one for weeks. I cannot wait.
It better be phenomenal, or I'm gonna be so pissed.
Yeah, it's coming out on the 5th. Join the battle between man and insect on Earth. Blah blah blah. So. We'll see, but definitely, this tape's looking hot.
Yeah, well, the thing is, all they need to do is just make another Earth Defense Force, but it's got, like, jetpacks, and it's got, like, all, you know, like, cool new mechs and shit. Like, I don't know, this looks fun.
Oh, speaking of mechs, you know what else I was looking at the other day? Has anybody played the old Tim Schafer's new game, that Trenched? Have you played that?
No, not yet. I have to grab that.
We know you played
it. I've been hearing good things.
I got nothing. All right, Justific, you want to take the last of these?
All right, let's see. Oh, God, is there anything we're talking about here? So there's Ninjamurai, which is sounds like a clever portmanteau, but nothing. It's a PSP mini title from Open Emotion Studios. I looked at the screenshots for this. It looks like a, kind of like a Ninja Gaiden almost. So, you know, it might be cool. The Chosen, which is a mythical, massively multiplayer online role-playing game by Snail Games, and there is nothing in the page about it. And then rounding out PlayStation Move Ape Escape, a Resistance dual map pack, and a Nintendo DS game that's simply called Jewel Match. This is the height of Nintendo DS gaming.
Jewel Match.
Jewel Match.
Anything that is like Noun Verb. That's a good game title. Or Ape Swap. Punch. Gun Shoot. You know, we should...
Someone needs to make that game Ape Punch.
Yeah, you know, we should have, if we ever had a contest, we should have a contest, come up with the best noun verb game title you can. That's the official contest for next week with no prize.
The prize is if it's really good, I'll make you like a 2-day prototype of it.
Yeah, there we go. Dick smash, not applicable.
Yeah, difficulty, no penis. That's the difficulty.
Dick smash is actually a move I use on the ladies when I'm out at the bar. All right, let's go to
scream the name of the move as you do it, like Street Fighter?
Dick smash.
Dick smash.
All right, let's go to Judgment. All right, guys, this is a recap from last week, I'm sorry to say, but so I guess you're going to have to bear. I'll condense it, and it won't be as long, but basically we're talking about Child of Eden. It's a game on the 360 right now, and I believe it's eventually coming to the PlayStation Move at some point, but it's a sequel to Rez. First, let's talk about Rez. Rez is a classic game that I always loved back in the day. It's sort of an on-rail shooter that's all set to music, got some sort of... let's say existential kind of abstract themes to it. And it's all, everything you shoot is all kind of quantized to the music. And it had 5 levels. It was a little on the short side, but it was a lot. I thought the original Rez was a lot of fun. You played it, right, Justin Fick?
I played it. Yeah, I love it.
And you hate it, right, William?
Hate it.
It's like a mile away. It's a little tiny voice. I can't stop laughing. So basically, this is a sequel to that. It's finally been years and years. They re-released Rez on XBLA if you want to check it out. It's called Rez HD now. Basically, this is a pretty true sequel to the original Rez. Just like the original Rez, it's got 5 levels. It's a little on the short side, you could say that. It's all kind of themed around music. This one, though, has a lot more nature themes. The first one was, I would say, more electronic. This one's more nature themed. The graphics are really, really amazing. It's not like Call of Duty, you know, amazing, I guess, it's in a different way. I mean, there's just sometimes there's so much stuff on screen, so many colors it's kind of satisfying when you see the Xbox chug in places as it's trying to draw all these cubes turning into a whale that's, you know, turning into a bird. But I guess to review it, I'd say, if you're into rail shooters or you're into kind of abstract, because at its base, it is a very hardcore rail shooter. And I mean, you could say, oh, it's a touchy-feely game about feeling sight and sound. And if you want to enjoy it on that level, you can. But if you want to get on the leaderboards, because they got leaderboards for every level, every mode, with the Kinect, not with the Kinect. I mean, if you want to play it on a competitive level, it is very, very difficult. Like, I learned that if you push your hand forward and like to shoot and time with the music, you get additional bonuses like to your score. And then like if you can, so there's all these little scruples that you can like really maximize your points. So it is a hardcore game if you really want to get that deep into it. But at the same time, you know, it's got the Kinect controls, which I think work pretty good. But I can see how some people would say, oh, these are fishy or flaky. Main thing you got to do is turn up the speed on it, because it's at like retard speed by default. You got to crank that shit up to max move. And it would be nice if it was a little more precise. And, you know, when you're swapping hands, it's a little awkward to go between your two types of shots. But overall, I'd say it's easily the best game on the Kinect. Luckily, if you haven't bought it yet, I can't imagine sales are going to be that good for this game. And in fact, I think on Amazon today, they have it for $35 on Lightning Deal or something today.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, yeah, it'll probably go down in price. Maybe wait for it to go down if you're not that into Rez. But I think it's the, if you like the original Rez, or just go try the original Rez. It's free on XBLA, or the demo. If you're into that, you know, you'd probably be into Child of Eden. So, thumbs up, but I can still get if you're not into it. All right. Do one of the, oh, that's right.
I've actually got like a little mini judgment for this week too.
All right, lay it on us.
So, because I've had a lot of time to get back into my games, and I'm really happy about it. But I grabbed a game off of PSN called Outland.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you guys heard of Outland?
Maybe.
Nope.
So
it's just getting further and further away.
Soon, William Miller's just going to be like podcasting via like walkie-talkie, like. So, if I were to sum up Outland in a sentence, it would be Castlevania, the 2D Castlevanias, mind you, meets Ikaruga.
Ooh. Oh, that's right. This is, yeah, I saw this on XBLA. It's got the red-blue color switch, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, so you're a dude, and it's, you know, it's kind of got that Metroidvania gameplay, and you get a sword. You can do all kinds of sword moves. And very quickly, you get the ability to switch between two colors. And, you know, if you play Ikaruga, you know exactly how this works. So, if you know, you know there's bullets going everywhere, and it's actually got a lot of bullet hell in there. So there's tons of bullets going all over the place, and the bullets are also of the two colors. And if you are the same color as the bullet, you absorb it, and it doesn't hurt you. You only hurt by bullets of the opposite color. So there's a lot of, like, fancy switching, and then the enemies are also of two colors, and you can only hurt enemies of the opposite color. So there's a lot of, like, artful switching involved, and there's also, like, cool puzzle elements, like certain platforms phase in or out with, you know, with your color as well. And there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on. And it's got like the, you know, sort of like the Metroid staples of things that you unlock, you know, different abilities. So you get the ability to slide, you get the ability to use teleporters, you use launch pads and stuff like that, and different kinds of moves that open up different areas of the world. And it's very cool. It maintains a good level of difficulty. Like I'm very hardcore with these games, and there are some parts that I found challenging. The boss battles are pretty cool for the most part. I was really only let down by the first boss battle, which was, you know, kind of run of the mill. But then you know, like there's another boss battle that just, you know, it almost gave me chills how good it was. Like it kind of starts off as a regular boss battle, but by the end of it, it's like, do you guys remember that the boss from Contra 3 that has you riding on missiles?
Maybe.
There's a boss that, you know, you had to like jump and hang on all these missiles, and the missiles kept blowing up, and you had to keep jumping from missile to missile. Like this, like by the end of this boss fight, like there's platforms like free falling, and you're trying to jump from platform to get to the boss and hit it. Like it was very cool.
Hmm.
So nice. I'm liking it.
So wait,
like,
now how long is this game? Is it like pretty short, or I mean, standard, like, I don't know, Castlevania style length?
It's fairly short. I haven't quite beaten it yet. I'm maybe like 80% of the way through, but I'd say maybe like 4 or 5 hours of gameplay.
Okay. How much is it? I think it's like $10. 15?
$10. $10.
Oh, that's cheap these days on XBLA.
Yeah, like there isn't as much exploration that goes on. Like there's a marker that continually moves to show you where you're supposed to be going, and your destination is always marked on your mini map. So there isn't that much exploration the way there is in a Metroid game or like Symphony of the Night, but it's got a lot of the same platforming elements you'd see in those games. So it's more like here's this platforming challenge, get through it. It's pretty obvious where you're supposed to go.
Right.
And when it backtracks, it leads you through it. So, I mean, there's really not much exploring the world to do. You sort of let yourself be led around by the nose. So, like, that part isn't as cool as, you know, like an old school Metroid. But it's, you know, it is more of, you know, it's sort of like a linear platformer that allows you to go back and look back on yourself if you want to. So it doesn't have that pure exploration. But I really like the game. Thumbs up. It's something new. It's, you know, it's two great tastes that taste great together, I suppose. So $10 is worth checking out for sure.
All right. Let's move on to feedback. All right, I'm not sure exactly what feedback we have and or have not read, so let's err on the side of reading something twice, just to make sure. We're here. William Miller, you want to take this one?
All right, let me scoot back up to my microphone here. All right, Wild Penis writes, all right, gentlemen, if you're not going to do tapes, T-A-P-E-Z, all in capital letters, then at least do some sort of discussion or theme shows. We've already read this. The old Mega Man shows.
I said that. I think we read this last show, though, and so it never got on air.
Well, I wasn't paying attention.
No kidding.
The old Mega Man shows were one of your best, simply because of Blake reading all the boss names and dying when he got to Cyber Beast. I love Cyber Beast. Wait, screw that. Just do a section where you guys narrate a trailer and add commentary, especially when Wily gets all Class 5 chubular excited, like it's Flippy Flap Down Below time, reading of the words conflict and revolution from the trailer. That was from last show, I believe. I got very excited when I saw the Ace Combat trailer.
Oh, that's right.
Keep up the window smashing. Great work, Wild Penis.
Now, you know what we could do? I've been thinking about this for the tape section. Like, instead of making it, instead of trying to pull like a stump buck kind of thing, you know, why don't we just do sort of like a what you play in this week kind of thing? You know, I mean, because even if it's an old game, like, you know, I also, you know, like, for instance, this week I got back into some old TurboGrafx-16 space shooters. Like, I found like Superstar Soldier and Soldier Blade up on the PSN. I grabbed them. Like, you know, like, we could totally talk about, you know, what we're playing, and that could lead into those types of games. Like, oh, hey, I'm playing Final Fantasy II, and I remember that game. That was really cool. You know.
All right. Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, let's totally do that next week. What do you mean we didn't do a section? We didn't forget. What? What are you talking about? No, we should. What? Look, we'll brainstorm some stuff. Just Vic, take a seat.
Let's see. Falcor writes in, how about Stump Buck at 80s movies, female anatomy, things you shouldn't put in your mouth, potent female potables, etc. Good to see you guys come back from the dead, Falcor. P.S. Blake Burgermonger.
Oh, that's right. No, I think we might have actually read this one before. I don't know. I can't remember
which one was also last week.
Yeah, I don't remember. So those are our voicemails. Those are our emails. Here we got one voicemail this week.
Blake Buck, just woke up. I had a dream. I was at Comic-Con, and I had to share a room with someone I didn't know. So I go up to the room, and it's like a super hot girl. Well, she starts undressing in front of me, and I turn around thinking that's kind of weird, you know, let her undress and change or whatever.
I love this guy's voice. It was a super hot girl undressing.
I go ahead and leave the room. I come back later, still trying to figure out why she undressed in front of me, and I turn on the TV, and there's your face, and apparently you gave her battle instructions to have sex with whoever her roommate is. Yeah, it was like one of those Lethal Weapon type of tapes, you know, where you're like standing in front of the big boat on the pier and it's like ship cart. You know, well, that's not fucking the main part of the story. What I'm saying is I can't have sex with this girl now because I'd feel bad because two of my most fundamental instincts are debating. Don't rape, help win battle. You know, I'm just trying to stay the fuck out of my dreams, Blake Buck. I'm going back to bed.
You know, I love our listeners. We have the strangest, most wonderful listeners on the planet. And with that, I think we've reached the end of this week's best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
Pretty good show.
Got any feedback for us? It's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Call listener line 845-BATTLE-9.
Dude, if you dream of us, we want to hear about it.
Yeah. Also got to thank Craig Reed for doing the edits on the shows. Suda Sushi and TK for helping out with the site. And I guess that's it. So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Wayne Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we'll see you next time. All right, gentlemen, don't delete it like I did last week.